You're listening to Dr. Barry Dworkin on Sunday House Call.
There are different approaches to treating uterine fibroids, ranging from medical therapy to surgery, including hysterectomy. A report appearing in the August 1st issue of Obstetrics and Gynecology by the Mayo Clinic and its collaborators, the Magnetic Resonance Imaging Guided Focused Ultrasound for Uterine Fibroid Group at Brigham and Women's Hospital and Harvard Medical School, looked at non-invasive outpatient treatment for non-cancerous uterine tumors. And I'm pleased to introduce Dr. Elizabeth Stewart, Professor of Obstetrics and Gynecology, Division of Reproductive Endocrinology at the Mayo Clinic and Mayo Medical School, and author of Uterine Fibroids, The Complete Guide. Good afternoon.
It's my pleasure to join you today.
What are uterine fibroids? What are they? What is their definition?
Okay. Uterine fibroids are not cancerous and they're not precancerous. They're benign, smooth muscle cell growths that are in the muscle layer of the uterus. And they're actually extremely common, that at least 25% of all women know that they have them. And if you actually look very closely, up to 75% of all women will have them. They're mainly a reason to seek medical attention when they cause heavy menstrual bleeding, mm-hmm. or when they get so large that they press on the bowel or the bladder or cause problems with reproduction.
Are there any factors that contribute to their growth or formation at the beginning?
We know a little bit about what contributes to their growth and formation, but one of the reasons we don't have great therapies is that historically people haven't bothered to study the biology. Mm-hmm. So the amount of information we know about fibroids compared to what we know about heart disease or asthma is pretty limited. But there appear to be several things. First of all, it appears that there are genetic risk factors. We're just beginning to understand specific genes that may contribute to fibroids. But we do know that if you have a family history of fibroids, you'll have an increased risk yourself. If your twin has a fibroid, if she's an identical twin, you'll have twice the risk as if she's a fraternal twin. And we're hoping to understand the genetics better.
Mm-hmm.
There are also some lifestyle and environmental issues that influence fibroids. Actually, having a term pregnancy decreases your risk of mm-hmm. having fibroids. And it appears that eating green vegetables may decrease your risk, and eating meat may increase your risk. There's also some evidence that being on birth control pills and other hormonal contraception may decrease your risk. And that's interesting because for many years we were told that it was a problem, and
right.
women with uterine fibroids shouldn't be on birth control pills.
And as an extension of that, do fibroids shrink or diminish in size after menopause? If a woman doesn't have the fibroids removed, do they tend to shrink down after menopause?
Yes, that's a great point, that if you can make it to menopause without seeking treatment, you're pretty much home free. That if your problem is heavy bleeding, when you get to having no menstrual bleeding, then that problem is cured. And for most women, they get significant shrinkage of the fibroids at menopause. There is, however, a small set of women mm-hmm. who don't get any shrinkage at menopause. And those are the women that are most likely to be frustrated if they've been waiting and waiting and waiting for a couple of years for menopause to come, and then nothing happens.
My next question is sort of a combination of three, and it's the indications for treating fibroids and the approach that you would take to a woman coming into your office, what you would do to evaluate them, and on the basis of that, what procedure or which one would you choose, and what are the outcomes of each if in terms of how you're selecting the patients for their particular size of the fibroid?
Wow, I think that's about 20 questions in one instead of three in one. In fact, that's one of the reasons why I decided to write a book.
Right.
Because if your only treatment is hysterectomy, the decision-making is easy. But to try to fit the right treatment to each particular woman, given a huge lack of evidence-based medicine in this field, mm-hmm. you really have to consider a lot of options. So in terms of thinking about indications, right now the only indication for treatment is if you have symptoms that are causing you to seek treatment, such as heavy menstrual bleeding, anemia, pressure, discomfort, pelvic pain. We hope in the future, as we understand, you know, who's at risk genetically and what causes fibroids to grow and develop, we'll have strategies for prevention. But right now, having symptoms is really the reason to intervene. In terms of thinking about evaluation, the major components of the evaluation are a pelvic exam to get a sense mm-hmm. of the size and movement of the uterus, as well as to do the routine things that you would want to do for health care, like a pap smear. Also, most women get an ultrasound, and the reason for the ultrasound is really twofold. First of all, it tells you that you are dealing with a fibroid instead of an ovarian tumor or something else that it could be confused with on pelvic exam. And secondly, it starts to give you an idea about the size, the number, and the location of the fibroids. Because as we go to minimally invasive treatment mm-hmm. options instead of hysterectomy, those facts are really critical. And some treatments can deal with only one fibroid, others can deal with many, many fibroids.
No.
And I think once you have that information, the woman's symptoms, some information about size and location, then there are even more personal factors that come into play when deciding about treatments. Because your age and the, mm-hmm. the number of years until you get to menopause plays a role. Whether or not you've completed your family or whether or not you're actively pursuing pregnancy is another decision point, as well as flexibility you have in terms of work and family obligations. Sometimes a particular treatment is ideal for the disease, but given that the woman may be the sole wage earner with several small children, time out of work becomes a critical mm-hmm. decision point.
What are some of the common approaches to treating uterine fibroids, apart from, because I want to get into this a little later, is the magnetic resonance guided focused ultrasound. But prior to the advent of that, what were some of the procedures that are offered and still offered?
Okay. Well, first of all, many women are on hormonal medications like birth control pills or Depo Provera or progesterone-containing IUD, not only for contraception but to relieve fibroid-related symptoms. So that's a big category that's not necessarily even counted as fibroid treatments. Most specific fibroid treatments are surgically related. And hysterectomy still remains an important treatment, although many women try to avoid hysterectomy, given the size and number of fibroids or their reappearance after more conservative treatments, some women will still do well with hysterectomy. There are also a group of treatments that remove the fibroids and leave the uterus in place.
Mm-hmm.
And those are termed myomectomies. And sometimes myomectomies need to be done through the same abdominal incision that you would use for a hysterectomy. But now we also have the option of sometimes using small telescopes, either a telescope inside the uterus or a telescope through the belly button, a laparoscope, like you use for tubal ligation to remove those fibroids. And finally, the other big category of treatment option is uterine artery embolization. And it's also called uterine fibroid embolization, and it's been around since the early 1990s. In that procedure, you make a small incision right where the leg meets the trunk, and you use a catheter to go in and use little small pellets to block off the blood supply to the uterus. And the chief advantage of that option is that the recovery is usually quicker, and women can get symptomatic relief and get back to work earlier.
We're in conversation with Dr. Elizabeth Stewart, Professor of Obstetrics and Gynecology, Division of Reproductive Endocrinology at the Mayo Clinic and Mayo Medical School, and author of Uterine Fibroids, The Complete Guide. When we come back, we'll talk about a non-invasive outpatient treatment for uterine fibroids called magnetic resonance imaging guided focused ultrasound, get into the study that was done in the Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology and the results that have been found for women undergoing this procedure. You're listening to Sunday House Call. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. We'll be back in just a few moments.